Alrighty, you are listening to RDU Breakfast, and we're in the fringes, as I am every Wednesday, here chatting with ACT MP Mark Cameron. Good morning.
Well, morning, sir. How are you?
Fantastic. Thanks for coming on to the show. Very excited about it.
Yeah, absolutely. A pleasure, my friend. No drama whatsoever.
Oh, I love. So, yes, as always with a first-time guest, I've got to ask you what three things from the last week of your work have left you feeling good, have been worthwhile, stuff like that, highlights.
Oh look, gracious me, where does one start? I suppose the polling result was absolutely fantastic. The latest poll, or one of the many polls that came out, had it at over 16.5%, which was absolutely fantastic. So they've certainly won. And, you know, it's a hell of an achievement after 25 years of active Parliament. So, you know, for all the rigors that the ACT Party went through in its infancy and where it is today, that's a tremendous achievement. And I suppose what I would do is actually cap it off with the end of life Choice Act, which is, you know, I think we would all agree is now reaching its final milestone, and will become a law effectively next month.
Jeez, yeah, time flies, doesn't it? It feels like just yesterday where we were voting on it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, well,
absolutely.
So pleased to hear about it. Oh, gosh. See, you're right, because there are so many things I would love to cover, but we only have a certain amount of time. So the first being Three Waters, if we could get into that, because I saw 30K signatures on ACT's petition to dump Three Waters, but I honestly know very little. I have done some research, but for the people out there as well, or Tahi, you know. So what's the big idea, and what change actually comes from petitions like this?
Oh, look, I think the thing is, well, let's go to the latter part of your question first. Mm. At the end of the day, this is the public sentiment pushing back on what seems to be an erosion of all manner of regional activity by water assets. I mean, this by central government. So the Three Waters itself talks to wastewater, drinking water, and stormwater. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you've got you've got councillors, you've got ratepayers up and down New Zealand at total odds with what the government is asserting. So, in essence, the 67 councils would have their water assets put into basically four providers. Oh. And by virtue of that, in the Three Waters framework, you know, stormwater, drinking water, and wastewater, we then have a real issue about who has regulatory oversight of those assets, and where the funding would actually go. And you can see, for a chap like me who lives in Northland, I would fall under the same provider of those that are living in Auckland.
Ah, wow, gosh, that feels like an umbrella and a half. I don't know.
Huh. Yeah, absolutely. Jeez. Absolutely. And local nuances and money that's already been spent here over the various generations by respective ratepayers, potentially that oversight and where those assets lie would have some authority or a provider, in many instances, nowhere near where that region has been adjudicated.
That's
a concern.
Interesting. Gosh. Well, it's critical New Zealanders have safe drinking water, of course, and just high quality infrastructure as well. So given that our current system isn't up to scratch, but Labor's three water reforms are missing the mark, how do you think Labor has missed the mark? I've taken this off your Facebook page. And how should we be refocusing the conversation to what marks they should be hitting, perhaps?
Well, I think the thing is, what I would be suggesting the government did was actually listen to the regions. And again, central planners quite often have the best of intentions. Unfortunately, we've got a government that seems to like thicker layers of bureaucracy versus less bureaucracy. But I would say to the government, listen to the regions. You've got councils that are saying, you know, look, their fiscal position is certain. They have good sense of where their assets are and how their water assets are used. And this government seems tone deaf to that. So I would suggest the best place to start is listen to the 30,000 signatures and the people that signed our petition and petitions like it, and listen to your council.
Mm, that collective voice, eh? That's the one. You know it.
Absolutely.
So we'll move to talking about vaccines now, vaccinations, the good old pandemic. So it'd just be wrong of me not to. It'd be rude not to. So considering your rural perspective, how can we better uplift and support rural communities who are perhaps critical or sceptical of vaccines, coronavirus and all that good stuff?
Yeah, sure. Look, well, I'm a cow copy. I live on the farm when I'm not in Parliament. And I know my farming colleagues, especially in rural New Zealand, we're quite often quite conservative. And there's a couple of things that sort of go on in rural small communities like mine. Mm-hmm. There's that aspect that we're conservative. And two, quite often there's connectivity issues. You know, we don't have access to digital media to the same degree. And quite often, travelling to a healthcare provider to get a vaccine is actually quite an onerous task. You talk to some of the chaps that I know down in Otago and places out the back there of Wanaka. It's quite a long way to actually get into a healthcare provider to get vaccinated. So it's a combination of those things.
Mm-hmm.
And
access,
I think really we need better connectivity, better accessibility to healthcare providers, and better understanding of what the vaccine will do to help communities and protect the future of those communities going forward.
Mm-hmm. So down that track, should vaccinations be compulsory? It's always interesting to hear both sides of the House's thoughts, especially considering just the way that this pandemic's been globally politicised, shall we say.
Yeah, look, my friend, absolutely not. It's not a compulsory thing. At the end of the day, the ACT Party's been very clear on it. We respect the rights of the individual right down to their own one, their personal property, i.e. their body. If they choose to vaccinate or choose not to, that's totally up to them. But I would stress this point. There's a couple of things that we would all have to acknowledge. None of us wanted coronavirus. We're all now living in this global reality of this pandemic. And there will be those that equally choose to be vaccinated, and potentially they could be event organisers, they could be restaurateurs, they could be your employer, beg your pardon. And by virtue of that, an employer, for example, has to provide a safe work environment, and it's their choice to potentially choose not to employ you based on your vaccine status. So there's two ways of looking at it. We're very clear. If you choose to be vaccinated or not, that's ultimately up to you. But as an individual, you have to own the consequences of that decision.
Yes, that sentence wraps up my thoughts too. The consequence, 100%, comes into play. I feel people almost disregard it sometimes. Anyways.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely.
I've got to ask you about Youth Parliament, because it's fast approaching, and I love the youth voice. So why is the youth voice so important? What's so cool about Youth Parliament? Why should people be applying?
Oh, look, to be honest with you, this is new to me. I mean, as you well appreciate, I'm a newly elected Member of Parliament. I've got young children myself. Well, I shouldn't say young children, young adults, and I've got a teenage daughter. The youthful outlook, let's reframe this. The youth outlook going forward is going to be the new language of certainly the next generation.
Mm.
I think it's incumbent upon us as parliamentarians to give them a segue into what their future could potentially look like. I mean, these are going to be the new business owners of the future, the new entrepreneurs, the new the innovators, etc. And if nothing else, it's incumbent upon us as parliamentarians to give them a sense of how Parliament works, and by virtue of that, actually have a run at the wicket, we might say, and have a crack at it themselves.
Oh, it's so cool. Love to see it. Well, I'm so pleased to hear that. As every week, I ask MPs to ask questions of each other. Last week, I interviewed Dr. Elizabeth Kerekere from the Greens. So she has this question for you, Mark. Elizabeth.
Oh,
yes. Yes. She'd been working within a select committee about self-IDs for queer folk last week. So in turn, she asked how rural communities can better connect and be represented in this work going through the House.
Oh, look, I think, and I've struck this myself a lot. I think the important thing is that all the parliamentarians that I work with, the whole 120 MPs and the institution of the House of Representatives, are approachable people. And I think, especially for rural folk, it's a matter of sending out emails, getting on the blister blower, get on the phone, We are accessible 99% of the time. Mm. And I think to ail concerns at a rural level, and quite often they're quite, the nuances of rural concerns are best articulated to rural folks. But I think at the end of the day, engagement is key. And quite often it's a matter of those in rural communities think, well, you know, parliamentarians like, haven't got time for me.
Mm-mm.
And I can tell you all the colleagues I work with are very engaging. So I would reiterate the point. Get on the phone, send an email, and articulate your concerns.
Yes.
Because it's our job as members of Parliament to be representatives. That's what's incumbent upon us to do. So we're here to listen, and we're here to help.
100%, as always. Gosh, fantastic. I must say that I've got to ask you for your question next week, because I'm unsure who it'll be, but it'll be someone from the other side of the house for sure. So if you've got a question for them.
Yeah, look, the question I would have would actually go towards the Greens, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
And I would probably ask James Shaw this, because he's a consummate professional in the climate change space. I would ask him what he's doing in terms of a quite specific language here, split gas approach for methane, given that methane is a different gas from CO2, its warming effects, and the latest report from the IPCC, which said agriculture has to be treated different in terms of methane and how it's framed.
Whoa, I will be breaking that down and getting that across. Thank you so much for that question. And honestly, thank you so much for the rural perspective this morning and just your perspective in general. It's been very interesting to hear your responses. So thank you so much for coming onto the show this morning, Mark.
Oh, look, my friend, it's an absolute pleasure anytime.
Oh, as per, gosh. Well, that again is Mark Cameron, ACT MP. Thank you so much.
Take care. Talk to you soon. All my friends.